This hour brought to you by Waters Equipment. Always a pleasure when we get to say hello to our good friend Vince Ferrara, who joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Vince, how are you?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Doing fine. So have you packed those bags? Are you ready to head to Omaha?
No. We got a long way to go on that on that front. But, I mean, exciting times, obviously, for Tennessee. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, so just start with the accomplishment itself. Tennessee able to host the first time ever a Super Regional in Knoxville, and they made the most of it. Fans made the most of it, and it was an incredible atmosphere, wasn't it?
It was, and, you know, you and I got a chance to go out to our tent and the Sports Animal tent out there, and it was so packed, especially, you know, on Saturday. And, you know, it's gift of soul to see Tennessee fans have something to get excited about athletically, you know, with so many tough times and disappointments and everything else, heartbreak, you name it. So, and this team, they're, besides just the fact that it's been some pickings in terms of program success, this team is incredibly likable for many reasons. They're really good, their personality. They play hard all the time. You can tell how well coached they are. Fans love the coach and connect with the coach. You know, I'll just go on and on. There's just so many reasons to like this team, in addition to how there's just that hunger and starvation to follow a quality winner. So it shows the passion of the fan base that when you produce one, that they will follow. I think that message is, if it was forgotten, it was a stark reminder to the University of Tennessee and everybody that you put a quality product on the field and fans will be there, you know, with the passion that's, you know, perhaps unmatched in the country. So it was awesome to see that, and so many individual little observations. But as far as the games go, you know, the dramatic fashion that this team has relied on so all year, that is another reason why they're so likable. You know, those dramatics weren't as relied upon this weekend, but they win a low-scoring game. They win the blowout with a long ball. They win all different kinds of ways. And I think it really speaks to the versatility that this team has, regardless of the venue, regardless of the opponent, regardless of who's playing well individually. They always have that spirit to do what it takes to win, and Tony Vitello instills that confidence in them. So it was, you know, indicative of that. And just great to see, John, as you know, a lot of the veteran guys that have been through so much and way too many L's for their liking or their expectations, to get a chance to really cherish the moment and celebration afterwards, and have that great perspective that they did, and appreciation for where they've gone and are going, considering where some of them have been for the last 4 or 5 years.
Vince, how much of this fan support do you think is related strictly to a winning product, quality product on the field, as you mentioned, versus football season was disappointing, basketball season didn't end the way folks would want, versus COVID and people having a chance to get out now much more than they had before? How would you rank the support with those three items?
I would say just a winner in a bubble. I think that, you know, a big factor is a winner, not regardless of the sport. I think this fan base has shown that they will support a winner. So the fact that they're national level good, one of the best in the country and had been for a while, I think that's the biggest chunk of it. I'd also say, you know, just the fact that, it, you know, COVID, I would say people wanting to get out, you know, maybe a little bit, but gosh, I think there's so much appeal to this team. I think that's a bigger reason. What was your second option, Jimmy?
That football wasn't very successful and men's basketball ended up being a disappointment.
Yeah, you know, maybe more of a totality than just those things in recent times. You know, I can't speak for everybody, maybe a little percentage of it, and it probably all is a perfect storm and plays in together to a degree. But I think the biggest of those three would be the fact that they're really good and they are a winner, and fans will follow a winner when it's on that kind of national level. And then they proved themselves in conference play as well, and they kept doing things that hadn't been done in a long time. So it was a building thing. It was, you know, capacity opened up to 100%, that wasn't to Arkansas. So that was really where it had a chance to explode. But it doesn't mean that they wouldn't have been, you know, at a pretty high level prior to that had it been more open and we weren't still ramping our way back from COVID. I think that's why it kind of seems like it might be other things and you know, just everybody's kind of jumping on board all at one time, because we did go from zero to very little to out of this world packed in a very short period of time. But I think that was, you know, as much about the circumstances of still ramping up, fans being able to get out and weren't able to get out to support this team, more so than, you know, well, they're just looking for something to do so they'll go to a game. It's more than that. So I would put that at maybe the smallest percentage of those three options.
Yeah, they may be looking for something to do, but they weren't going to go watch a team that was 10-40. So, yeah, you had to have the success to get them out there. Baseball, right. How do you think baseball has benefited football and Josh Heupel?
Well, I think the biggest thing short term is it keeps it quiet on the football front. I think that's helpful to Josh Heupel rather than us, you know, and fans maybe breaking down, you know, where you are in terms of wins. You know, well, we had six, statistically we had six wins, or where, how do you get to seven? You know, is this a reality of a 4 or 5 win season? You know, it's just all those things that aren't incredibly fun to discuss when you have the reality that you're probably not competing for a, you know, division or a conference championship, and fans have become accustomed to that, unfortunately. So I that, and then the NCAA investigation, we haven't talked about that quite as much. I know, you know, there's like some questions every once in a while, where are we at? But I think the fact that that's not being broken down and focused on when you're looking for something to talk about in terms of football, I think that's a positive too. And look, they need to get to work, and they have been working in terms of the camps and recruiting and trying to make up some ground. This is so vital for them right now. So I think they love the fact that they're staying kind of low key and under the radar a little bit, letting Tennessee baseball do its thing, get that brand out there, which I think will help Tennessee as well, in addition to being very quiet. And you know, football always supports baseball and vice versa. So I think it's really cool to have that kind of stage of the Power T, and see, also let the fans do their thing during this run as well. That can only help football, because, you know, football is going to say, well, that's what's happening with baseball right now. Imagine what we can do at Neyland Stadium when we get back to winning, and you're going to be a key piece to that, and the fans will pack Neyland Stadium as well. So I think from recruiting, from keeping it quiet, those are all big things. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I think another reminder to UT and everybody else that this fan base is a, you know, sleeping giant, that they haven't had a chance to support a winner, and now they can really get into it and show what they're all about to people, you know, outside of the area.
Let's get a call from Jim. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hey, good afternoon.
You know, before I get to my question for Vince and the rest of you, I'll just make a short comment. It feels so good to have positivity in the Tennessee sports program. it's been just so negative for, I mean, the football program has just been a mess, and there's been, I mean, there's, we still have a ways to go. We got a long ways to go in that, and you got the investigation hanging over our head. And basketball's regular season wasn't bad. It didn't end the way we would have liked, but it feels so good to have people talking about you in a positive light from a national perspective. It's like, you know, an oasis in the desert, finally, you know. So anyway, that's my two cents on that. I want to get into a subject that I don't know a whole lot about, and I don't know if it's an art or a science or what, but it involves baseball recruiting, collegiate baseball recruiting. You're trying to, I guess, hit that fine line between going out and recruiting top-quality players that are going to join your school and play for you. On the other hand, if they're so good, then you run the risk of MLB having a notice in them too, and they opt to go the professional route. And maybe different coaches have different philosophies. Do you go for the five, you know, I'll just say five-star type players and hope that you're going to get most of them to stay? Or do you go for a number of players that are good, maybe not as good, and you try to develop them? Just talk about the art or the science, I don't know what it is, of collegiate baseball recruiting to have continually good baseball teams.
Well, Jim, it is so hard. I don't know how they do it, to be honest with you, because you can have a kid tell you he's going to go to college, that's his plan, he can sign, and then the next thing you know, he gets drafted and he's out of here. So if he's drafted high enough and the money is right, and sometimes they're throwing out dollar figures, so maybe they really do want to go to school, but so some kids will tell the major league teams, here's what it's going to take, and they'll throw out a number that maybe is way above where their projection is, basically saying, well, I really want to go to school, but if they absolutely blow the doors off with this amazing offer, then I would change my mind and I would go for that. And then sometimes you get that, sometimes you don't. So you don't, and then you have to see where, if that plays out in the draft. So even if things are lining up for everybody to come to you, to your school, depending on how the draft plays out, you may not get that kid that you thought everything was aligning for you to get him. The key is that I think Tony Vitello and his staff are not shying away from elite players. I think the key is to find the right guys that understand the benefit of college baseball and that have some sort of intention and understanding to the benefits of it from the big picture and how it can help them develop their game, run through the minor league system quickly, and then, you know, to some degree, you hope, value a college education as well. So I think there are enough of those elite players that get that, and I think there's more and more these days that understand that because so much success made baseball getting players that have played college baseball. So I think those are the kind of players, even if they're elite, that this coaching staff is still recruiting and trying to sign. And maybe the ones where if you're going all out after the best talent, you're going to get kids that if you really are truthful to yourself, you get a good hunch that they don't have a whole lot of intention to play college baseball. They just want to go straight. And I think maybe those are some of the guys that they might not be spending as much time and energy and resources on trying to recruit, but they're going after the elite players that they have a chance to land in school. And John knows this as well. The best schools are the schools that are able to get their players to campus that are, you know, high draft projections. They lose a couple, the Vanderbilts, the Floridas, they lose a couple, but they get some of those guys to go to school as well. And if you can get a couple to come to your school, even if you lose a couple, and your roster is good enough to where you're not dependent on every one of those new recruits that come in. That's how you sustain it. And then the next cycle, guess what? You have a couple of projected first rounders in a couple of years, and now more kids want to come and play with them. And so maybe the decisions are more towards coming to college as opposed to going to Major League Baseball. And then now you stack on a couple of more the following year. And that's where they're at. And that's kind of the approach. And maybe Tennessee has benefited from getting some of those guys to come to school, even if maybe they haven't lost first rounders, straight out of high school. They could, it very well could happen, but I think those are the differences. You miss some, but you get some, and then also recruiting the right guys that you think have a great shot to land on your campus.
Yeah, that was good. I would think if you're going to have a championship caliber team, you've got to go after good talent or very good talent and hope you can minimize or hope there will be minimal number of people that are not going to be with you. And maybe if you can minimize that and continue to recruit year after year and get most of the people you're shooting for, that's how maybe you can play or stay at a championship level. But I know it's a fine line. It's a little different than football. I know that. Well, guys, I appreciate the comments. It really is an exciting time right now, and it's fun to be following this baseball scenario. You guys have a great afternoon.
Jim, just two quick points on that. Number one is I would also want to find out how important education is to that person I'm recruiting. The second part of that is I think now you can point to college baseball as getting you very prepared for the majors, to where if you go to college baseball, you probably won't spend as much time in the minors as if you go directly from high school to the minors. So that could be another selling point.
Yeah. That's Jimmy Hyde. Go ahead, Vince. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you've seen it where Dave Serrano in certain years, he was devastated by the draft. And I think early in Tony Mattel's first year, I think he was as well. But it hasn't quite been as devastating here in recent years.
No, and what you hope to do is show that the experience playing for your program is not only one that's going to compete for championships, which would be high up the priority list for somebody making their decision coming out of high school, and then also that your guys are going to have a good time. I mean, enjoy playing together. And I think that what Tennessee has done this year, when you just see all the smiles, the incredible success, as Jimmy just mentioned, they've got the most wins of any team that's on its way to the College World Series. They've played more games than anybody else going to the College World Series, but still, 50 wins is 50 wins. And so I think you've got success. I think you've got a team that obviously loves playing for that staff and head coach. And I think that's all huge pluses that it might make somebody decide, you know what, I don't have to sign this contract now. I can go and have the life experience that is being a part of attending a university and then continue to develop as a player and then go on. So I just think that Tennessee's put itself in that position, and they have been able to convince, I think probably more so from the junior college ranks, but also Blade Tidwell's presence. Maybe if it's a 10-round draft or more last summer, that's not the case, but this is something that he's dreamed of doing for years and years, so it might have been regardless of when his name was called. He might have been on his way to Knoxville, but his 10 wins certainly show that he's enjoying where he is right now. Our guest, Vince Ferrara, to join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Vince, what do you think in terms of Tennessee's first matchup, and starting with the opponent that is the Virginia Cavaliers?
Yeah, it's cool. It's a different team for Tennessee to see. First ever meeting with Virginia, that Tennessee could potentially see in the College World Series. A couple of teams that Tennessee has not played before in their history. So it'll be neat. Kind of surprising, right, that they haven't you know, Virginia's not that far away, that they hadn't been able to set, you know, something up in terms of a, you know, pre-conference or something, especially back in the day. And then, you know, never met in the postseason in any way either. So I like that. Virginia is a team that got hot late. The last time they were in the NCAA tournament was the year that they won it all, back in 2015. So it presents a different matchup. They've got, I think, a pretty balanced team. They've got some really good arms. They've got Teal Kid yesterday with a massive home run to win it for them, to put them ahead and help them win it. So they've got some pop, but they've got some pitching as well, and they have postseason experience as a program. Although none of the kids that will go to this year for that team have been in that situation. So I think Virginia has the longest odds. In fact, they do, according to what Alan Bell put out there from a Vegas sports book. So Virginia's at plus 1,500. Tennessee, the second best odds, at plus 330, only behind Vanderbilt at plus 235. So I think Tennessee will be the favorite. And it's a, you know, a game that on paper you'd think Tennessee should win, but they're very capable in that ACC. And I think it's a neat, just program-to-program type of matchup for the Volunteers in the College World Series.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, they might not overwhelm you with their numbers. If you want to look for a strength, you could point to pitching first and then maybe defense second. They aren't going to be a team that kind of raises your eyebrows when it comes to what they do offensively, but as you mentioned, timeliness has been their key. This is a team that did what LSU was hoping to do. They survived four elimination games to win the regional and then bounced back with back-to-back wins. So they've won six straight elimination games, and that has to give a team a ton of confidence, doesn't it?
No doubt. And you mentioned defense as well, John. There was a stretch of almost three straight plays where Dallas Baptist was within one inning, where both teams were flashing the leather in that game three yesterday, the Super Regional. So impressive. And, yeah, Virginia can really pick it, and then they can pitch. And that's where they've typically had their strength. And then, like you mentioned, with those elimination games and having their backs up against the wall, they lost the first game and rallied to win the last two. So Virginia and Arizona, the two teams that Tennessee has never played in the field. Tennessee has two meetings all time against Texas. They're 2-0, last one being in 2012. And then obviously Mississippi State. Tennessee has played the Bulldogs 91 times, 31-60. And of course, the last one being a run rule win in Hoover. And then on the other side of the bracket, Tennessee's played Stanford three times, a 2-1 record. They last played last year in 2020. And the Red Rock Classic, is that right?
Correct.
Yes. With Texas Tech. Yeah. And then NC State, they played them four times, 4-0 record, but they haven't played NC State since 1998. And then obviously we know Vanderbilt with their million all-time meetings between the two. And Tennessee, of course, has a winning record against Vandy. To UT's calculations, I know Vandy maybe shows something different, but UT's calculations, 343 meetings, 178, 163, and 2. So that's Tennessee versus the field in the College World Series.
Vanderbilt can't add. That's a problem.
If I'm not mistaken, that last meeting with NC State came in under the umbrella that was the Hormel Foods Baseball Classic in the old Metrodome in Minneapolis. And as part of your welcome basket, everybody got their own 10-pound beef stick. Salute.
Nice. By the way, one of the meetings with Stanford, the three of them, was a game in the College World Series. And that was in 1995, John, as you may remember. That was a 6-2 Tennessee win over Stanford in the College World Series in 1995. The only team that Tennessee has played in the College World Series out of the field this year.
Scott Schreffel came through big time for the Big Orange in that particular victory. Our guest, Vince Ferrara. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
Vince, with the college football playoff, the expansion talk going to 12 teams, not having automatic bids for any conferences, simply taking the six highest-ranked conference champions and then six others. What are your thoughts on the expansion for the college football playoff?
Well, I'm surprised at some of the details that they've – well, first of all, surprised that it initially was the plan that they wanted to go to the 12, seemed such a big jump. But then you start thinking about, all right, they're trying to make up money from what was lost during the pandemic, and that's what this is all about. I know inclusion and all that, fairness, all these other things, you know, like keeping people's seasons alive. Those are factors that have come, that will come from this plan, if indeed it does happen. But the reason is they're trying to recoup their dollars, and they could potentially get three times the money in new TV deal because of such important games that you would jump. You jump, I think, from three games in terms of a college football playoff to 12. So you have not only much better inventory, you have inventory that will draw massive numbers and revenue, add revenue from that, and sponsors and everything else. So that's what this is all about, first and foremost. But I think what you mentioned there, in that there's not predetermined automatic bids for winning your conference, that it is open. I think that inclusive part of it is interesting. It's a positive, I think, because then it would save everybody from having, a team from a conference that was all four barely above 500, especially when it comes to conference championship games. That hadn't been talked about a lot.
All right. There's a reason it hasn't been talked about a lot, Jimmy. They keep cutting people off.
That's right. People are trying to say something, and then boom, somebody jumps in. Where is Lily when you need her?
That's right.
Yeah. So,
it's anyway, a conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And where Vince is going with that, and obviously the money, I think he's exactly right about that. This is a lot about money. And the one thing I was going to ask Vince when we get him back in is I do believe that they are going to implement this expansion before the contract runs out. They got to recoup a lot of this money, and they were paid about $470 million a year. Now that's going to, with all these other playoff games, balloon to, in my opinion, at least $1 billion a year. And I think that that's what they're looking at to try to help soften the blow from some of the revenues lost due to COVID.
What do you think, Vince?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is 100% what it's all about. So it would be 11 games, not 12. I was mentioning that would be in the TV inventory for the playoff, but it's absolutely about money. And, I was talking about the not being inclusive for automatic spots into the playoff. I think that's a real positive to where, if you have an upset in a conference championship game and, a team is 7-5, and whether it's the Pac-12 or ACC or whatever, then you're protected. And then you can maybe get someone that, has had a great year out of the group of five. I don't think the Pac-12 champ would have gotten in last year under that format. So I think that's a positive. I like that. And then you come across as you're trying to leave people out. So I think that's a good thing. And look, the best teams will rise above, and they won't have to worry about that if you have a good year. So that definitely is a positive. But, to me, the biggest – another big question is how are they going to do it? Like, where's the bowl game tie-ins? Are they playing the neutral site games for the bowls, to where those sites are in the first round of the playoffs? Those are incorporated into bowls, and you have them at predetermined locations, or will you do it at the home site of teams, 5 through 8? And then some people have talked about weather, what if you have to go in the Northeast and things like that. So, and then also the quick planning turnaround that's something that Greg Sankey has had some questions on is, hey, you know, we'd have to turn somebody around and get a home game fairly quickly for that first round. And then the teams 1-4 wouldn't get a home game. How does that fit for those teams? So there's still a lot of it to work out, but you know, it's college football. So we're going to watch. It is certainly going to be difficult for in terms of number of games for the teams that make it all the way to the top and games played. And, you know, we'll see how the dates work out, but there's just a lot of things, a lot of still questions out there. And I agree with you, Jimmy. I had thought when this was first being discussed, you know, a number of years ago, that they find a way to come around on this prior to the end of the contract. The current contract would run out, TV contract would run out 2026. I think the more of the reality is them doing it before the last cycle of the Bulls roll through. And they do it in 2023. The way they're operating with urgency and talking about this so much, that's where I would lean them going more so than talking about it and tabling it to the end. Because to your point, they need to recoup the money now, not in 2026.
Final segment for us with Vince Ferrara is his appearance brought to you by Waters Equipment. If you want to get a question or comment in under the wire, 656-9900, 656-9900. And Vince, do you have a thought when it comes to we're down to the conference semis in the NBA playoffs when you see what Phoenix has done and dispatching Denver the way it did? How if you're the Suns, how do you keep that momentum and avoid the rust as Utah and the Clippers are now tied at two games apiece?
Yeah, it's crazy how that series was over so quickly when I think many people thought that that might be as competitive of a semifinal as we were going to have, especially the way game one was so good and close. And it turns out that one was over quick. And then the other three are all 2-2. So it's been bizarre. Now, there have been things that have transpired, you know, injuries and so forth to lead Milwaukee and Brooklyn to be tied at two, which is the most surprising to me. Next most would be Utah and the Clippers tied at two. I thought Utah would win that series and, you know, do it in five or six games, but just not enough help for Donovan Mitchell. And then, you know, Atlanta, Philadelphia, I kind of, before the postseason, I probably would have picked Philadelphia, but having seen Atlanta play in the postseason, I kind of thought that the Hawks would win that series and certainly needed last night's rally to tie that at two. But, you know, who knows? Phoenix may be waiting a while, to your point, John. So I don't know. I mean, they're a young team. That's another thing that they're going to have to do that is different for them. I don't know how banged up they are. Maybe the rest will help them recharge the batteries and heal up a little bit. But it will be interesting to see how they respond coming out of that, because you could very well be waiting on the Clippers or the Jazz for a while before you get to you get to have an opponent set to go.
Can Brooklyn get healthy enough in time to dispatch the Bucks?
Well, again, surprised that, you know, they guess, you know, Kyrie Irving was banged up and he is out for tonight's game, and now they've upgraded James Harden to doubtful. So I don't know what that means. I think you're going to give him a test, a go in warm-up, see how he feels. Would not shock me that if suddenly he's ready to go, or at least tries to. And yeah, I think they need that a second piece. The way their supporting cast isn't playing as well as they had been prior, the Bruce Browns and the Joe Harrises and those guys, Blake Griffin, those guys aren't playing as well. So that's putting a lot on Kevin Durant. And I think they need a second guy. If they have two of the three, the big three, I think they win that series with Milwaukee. But, you know, with just one, based on unless everybody else starts playing better, supporting cast, I think that might be dicey for Brooklyn.
Vince, what will folks find these days at 99.1thesportsanimal.com?
Yeah, tons of content on Tennessee. Obviously, lots on Tennessee baseball. The story about Neyland Stadium going full capacity and, you know, having ticket plans available, that and all the UT stories are available on our website at 99.1thesportsanimal.com. Of course, video section, go back and watch plenty of Tony Vitello and Tennessee players, and then our podcast. And you can get information on Sports Fest that's coming up in August. You can get information on the Big Ticket and find out where we're going to be on remote. A lot of national information. There's just tons of content. And I hope everybody will spend some time on it, see what we got there, and come back often.
Vince, always appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll talk to you guys later in the week. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That's Vince Ferrara joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Does so courtesy of our friends at Waters Equipment.